I'm not going to teach you of the scriptures today. I'm here as a messenger to share with you of what is happening today in the Middle East. And I do believe that some of the information that I will share with you in the next 45 minutes to an hour is not shared with you by the media in the U.S. of A. As you heard at the end of this presentation, I'll give you some time for Q&As. You're welcome to ask any question you want, but if I don't feel like answering, I'll say next one. Or I'll say no comment. Bear with me, because the information that you are going to receive is information that was gathered in the last 6 months, even close to a year. And I really hope, that it will enrich your understanding of what is there around the corner. Some of you have been with me on tours in the land. You find out that touring with us, with Pastor Joe and this huge family known as Calvary Chapel Philly, is a trip of a lifetime. If there's a way to turn the scriptures from black and white into colors, that's the pilgrimage that you have to join. If you want a change in your life, come, join us. And there is a pilgrimage, a tour that we are planning in the near future. Come, folks. You all know of the four Gospels. You're going to write the fifth one. You're going to put those four together, and every day we're going to walk where our Lord have walked. As an archaeologist, I'll do my best to revive those sites. You will be walking on holy ground. And you're going to hear Pastor Joe teaching. And if you want to know your pastor better, come, be with us for 10 days and you'll understand what it's all about. Where everything have begun. If I may, I would like to start with the presentation. And the title is The Syrian Civil War. You find out that just a few years ago, there's uprising that started in the Muslim world, mainly in totalitarian countries. And that uprising was known by the media as the Muslim Spring. We call it as the Muslim, I would say, winter. And you're going to find out why in just a moment. But first, let's just understand what Islam is all about. Because the split in Islam is the main reason for the war that is taking place today in Syria and cost hundreds of thousands of lives, that the world doesn't say much. But when one Palestinian is being shot, the world stand on his back feet and cry, "Oh my God." So if I may, you find out that, folks, Islam is a religion that really follows a book that is known by the name Quran. By the way, the presentation that I'm going to share with you, usually it's about 2 to 2.5 hours. I'm going to put it in a nutshell of the next 45 minutes. You can download and get all of those slides through I'm sure, the church site and really go through it in depth. So bear with me, folks, if there will be some slides that I'm going to touch, but not go really into details. So you find out, folks, when we talk about Christianity, and when you get into a Christian church, what is the symbol you find? You find a cross. When you get to a synagogue, what is the symbol you find? You find a Star of David or a seven-branch candelabra. When you go to a mosque, what is on top of the mosque? A crescent. Have you asked yourself why? Well, ladies and gentlemen, Islam is based on moon god. And they're still worshipping moon god. About, I would say, 1300 years ago, a man known by the name Muhammad managed to join together about 1,000 individual pagan tribes that were worshipping moon god and said, join me and I'll show you Allah. Well, eventually those have joined him. And you find that we're talking about the years 570 to June 632. Of time of the years of our Lord. At a certain point, what happened is that Muhammad have not pinpointed a successor. And when he eventually dies, you find a split that comes to be in the Muslim world. And one group is known by the name Sunni, and the other group is known as Shi'i. You find that most of Muslims are known as Sunni, about 75% to 80%, I will say, even though it says up to about 90%. It's very difficult to say numbers, folks. You'll find that an average Muslim family is 6.2 kids per family. An average of a Christian or Jewish family is 2.1 kids per family. And it's quite difficult to follow numbers. That's why you find over here numbers 75 to 90%. Well, we're talking about, I say again, 80% that are mainly Sunni. And then you've got 10 to 20% that are known as Shia. Now, let's go a step forward. Who are those Sunni? Well, you find that the largest denomination of Islam that are known as Sunni are kind of a people that following Muhammad's word and action, and they preserve the tradition known by Al-Kutub and Al-Sitan. Those are six major groups and books that are in the Quran. Now, Sunni believe that the first four caliphs were the rightful successor to Muhammad. Now, since their God Allah did not special and was specific of any particular leader to succeed him, and those leaders were elected, you'll find that the Sunnis believe that anyone who is, I would say, righteous or just could be and become a caliph, but they have to act according to the Quran and the Hadith. The example of Muhammad that was given in the past will be eventually in the future of the right of the people. Now, the Shia that are the smallest group, okay, those, while the Sunnis believe that the caliph should be elected by a community, the Shia believe that Muhammad appointed his son-in-law, and doesn't matter the name, Ali ben so-and-so, as his successor, and only creation, okay, of Ali could be an imam. As a result, they believe that Ali was the first imam. Imam, by the way, in Arabic means leader. Rejecting all of the previous caliphs that were before. Now, what happened is, there is a battle take place. And you heard about the name, known by the name Karbala. There are many American soldiers that were, I would say, wounded and hit in that area and were killed also. due to the fact that that place became a center of that small minority known as the Shia, as they lost the battle against the Sunni. There was a split that becomes. The Shia lost the battle. Ali lost his head. And the hatred between the Shia and the Sunni is at the level that the only thing that will bring them here and there together are the Jews, the hatred to the Jew. If it wasn't for the Jews, what is happening today in Syria and Iraq would happen all around the world. So what gather those two together from time to time is the hatred to the Jew. Let's go on, folks, and you find that we got two groups. Look at that. The major group of 80% are divided to four subgroups. That little group of no more than 20% are divided into subgroups, and the ones that we refer to are those that are known as Alawi. Why Alawi? Because in Alawi, in Syria, there's a minority of the Alawite subsection of the Shia, okay, that rules Syria for the last, I would say, over 40 years. Let's look at the ethnic distribution, okay, in Syria. And you can see the different groups according to colors. There are Christians in Syria. Most of those Christians are Chaldeans. You'll find that they are mainly from the eastern part of the Christian church, founded by Constantine and Helena in Turkey, Istanbul. And that was the heart of the eastern part of Christianity that eventually spread through the eastern world. And those are just today about 5 to 7% of the population of Syria are Christians of that group. And you find that they're mainly located in the area of Aleppo. And by the way, Aleppo fell in the hands of ISIS just in the last few months. Now, as we go on, folks, you'll find that the Christians that I was talking about, there are also some Greek Orthodox, and there are minorities of Protestants, and I'm talking about no more than about a couple of hundred Protestants that are still living in Syria today. There's a group in Syria that are known as the Kurds. And you find out that Syria today is divided to so many groups that each one of them has his own goal and his own main so-called target. If it's the Kurds that wants a democracy, and the Kurds you'll find spread around the Middle East in the area of Turkey, Syria, and even a small part of Iraq. You find that the Turks are quite concerned about those, as they want to uprise, and they want their own freedom and their own state in Turkey. So you find the Turks against the Kurds in Syria. Now, what really happens is that the main agenda of the extreme Sunnite group is to bring the world back to what it was pre-1917. Ladies and gentlemen, 1917, there was a main war, first war that have taken place. In one side, you will find the British and the French. At the other side, you will find the Turks and who, folks? And the Prussians. Now, look at the size of the Turkish Empire, based on Islam, all the way to center of Europe, Hungary and so on. And I'm talking about all the way to the Middle East, Arabia, and the whole northern part of Africa. During that time, up to 1917, they live by the Muslim law. The Muslim folks, the Shiite extreme law. And we're talking about decapitation, we're talking about edict, and we're talking about many other ways that they follow eventually, even today. You find that Syria over there in that small area, that today is the center of the bubbles. And what is really happening is that Bashar al-Assad, that was born in 1965 and is the president of Syria since the year 2000, following his father, and he is the head of the Socialist Arab Ba'ath Party. Now, a minority. Those are Alawites, that group that I mentioned. They are no more than a 10% of the whole Syrian Muslims. They rule Syria. Now, you find that Syria, civil war, was ongoing armed conflict between forces loyal to the Syrian Ba'ath Party, government, and those seek to get rid of it. The conflict began in 15 March 2001. I'm talking about physical conflict, even though the idea started a year before 2010. You find something really interesting, that Arab so-called spring started in an area or in a country known by the name, folks, Tunisia. And the idea started at the 18th of December 2010 when they step up and say, we want our freedom. And that started in Tunisia when a peddler that was selling fruits and vegetables just ignited himself live in the middle of the market, protesting that he could not make a living even by selling a few apples and vegetables. It's amazing. It was like a fire in a haystack. And it was like a fire in a hayfield. And that fire went on. And it went on, folks, into Egypt. And it went on with a civil war in Libya. And it went with an uprising in Bahrain and Syria today and Yemen and so on, folks. And you'll find that most of the Muslim world is today on fire. So we say, well, that's their problem. No, it's not. It's their problem, but that problem is also ours. And let me tell you why. Look carefully on this map, and you can see the Arab Muslim world all the way from Mauritania to the north west of Africa to Syria. Well, you say, well, a minute, we don't see over here who? Iran. Folks, Iranians are not Arabs. Iranians are Muslims. They are Shiites, but not Arabs. Arabs we call those who came from Arabia. And the Arabia Peninsula is over here. That's where Muhammad gathered those individual groups and he turned them into Islam, following Allah. The what we call the Farsis or the Iranians are a group that have, let's say, embraced Islam in around 8th, 9th century and became Muslim. But they are Farsis, they're not Arabs. And they are Shiites. Now, as they are Shiites, and you can see some photos over here of the uprising. I'm not talking about 10,000, I'm not talking about 50,000, I'm talking about hundreds and thousands of people out in the street demonstrating. And what is the cause of uprising? Well, an authoritarian government, a lack of effective constitution, government corruption, unemployment, and no doubt that gets to those countries that I talked about. Now look at this slide, folks. It shows you something really interesting. It shows you the Sunni and the Shi'i. The Sunni are pro-Syrian opposition. The Shi'i are pro-Assad, the government that rules or trying to rule Syria still today. Now, who's the one that supports the ones that are pro-Syrian opposition? If you look carefully, folks, you'll find that Qatar, yes, folks, Qatar that we know as the one from Al Jazeera, and the one that supporting the armed Libyan opposition and home of the Jazeera television. And you see that Qatar also supports a Muslim Brotherhood that tried to rule Egypt at a certain time following an election that took place over there. And then we have the Shia that are pro-Assad, and we're talking about President Assad, that with him we have Iran and Iraq. And you find, folks, that Iran and Iraq are the ones that supporting the government that rules today Syria, that minority. So we have, at one end, we have the Sunni, at the other end, we have Shia, those who support the Sunni are the Qatarians, and those who support the Shiites are the Iranians that are not Arabs. Those are Farsis. Just to give you an idea, folks, and numbers, you see that's something small thing to think about. You find that the Saudi Arabian, okay, look at the so-called world kind of biggest arms supporter, or in, let's say, kind of importer. And then we have what's Saudi Arabia eventually passed on to ISIS. Yes, folks, Saudi Arabia eventually supports ISIS financially in quite a way. Money, arms, and everything that goes with that. Now, you find out something really interesting. That there are agreements between the different groups that are in the opposition against Assad. If we look carefully over here, we've seen that the division in Syria at 2012, and I talk about areas, okay, that started to control by ISIS. And look at the goals of the uprising. Each one has a different goal. You find that they are resisting against Bashar al-Assad, democratic reforms, regime change, 50 years of rule, expand civil rights, and lifting of the emergency law for the last 48 years. Now, where does the U.S. come into this whole kind of, I'll say, soup? You find that Syria is on the U.S. State Department list of countries that are sponsoring terrorism. And let me share with you something, folks. Then you can share that with whoever you want. When President Bush was standing out there and saying, folks, there is a smoking gun in Iraq, folks, he was right. He was right because we know very well where is that smoking gun today. That smoking gun, those chemical kind of missiles and warheads are today in Syria. They were smuggled from Iraq into Syria because the only country that gives a timetable of where and when they're going to attack is the U.S. Folks, they gave an ultimatum of 2 weeks saying we're going to attack and talk about the Gulf War, and then gave another week and said we are going to attack. And during that time, we know as Israelis that all of those arms were moved to Syria. Today, those weapons are there in Syria. And our concern that they will fall in the hands of those groups that you're going to find out in a few moments. And folks, bear with me with that. Now, you'll find out, folks, that weapons of mass destruction have become an issue in Syria. Where those weapons came from? They just fell up from the sky? No, folks, they came from Iraq. And that's what Bush was after. Now, going on, folks, Iraq, Bashar al-Assad believed that the war in Iraq is an American plan to rule the Middle East in favor of Israel. Syrian media have been focused on, folks, anti-American propaganda. There are two general sides. And look, folks, I'm trying to build your understanding from the foundations all the way to the split today. Not just between the Shiites and the Sunnites, but the groups that are there. So, what I did, I took two flags that they are using. One flag is the two-star flag, Syrian Arab Republic. The other flag, folks, the National Coalition of Syrian Revolutionary and opposition forces. Who are those? First, let's take the regime. That's Bashar al-Assad, the tyrant that rules with the Ba'ath Party Syria for the last 48 years, at least. You'll find that he is supported by whom? By Russia and Iran. And folks, you can check every word that I'm passing on to you over here. Now, what is the goals? To preserving Assad regime. Again, we're talking about the flag, the two-star flag. Okay, and beneath or under that two-star flag, you'll find eventually regime-affiliated armed groups. Look at those flags. And why do I refer to the flags? Because when we tour folks, and those who have been with us, we got all the way to the Golan Heights. We were standing over there on a mountain looking into Syria. And folks, with binoculars, you can see those flags moving from one area to the other, showing us who is dominating what area. And slowly, slowly, we see a very interesting group getting more and more of that area. We'll get to that in a moment. So, who are the ones that are supporting? Look at those flags. Let's start with the Syrian armed forces, folks, that are about 280,000 folks, and you'll download all of that information. I'm not going deep into, those layers. You'll find what is known as the Al-Quds forces and the militia. Folks, those are being sent directly from Iran. You have the National Defense Forces that are there. There's about 100,000 of them in the area. You have another group that are known as the Hezbollah, and you heard that name quite often because those are supported by Iran through Bashar al-Assad, and they are located in Lebanon. They are the ones that are usually launching the rockets over Israel from the north. Where those rockets come from? They come from Iran. Where the money come from? From Iran. Who are those Iranians? Those are Shiites. Now, pardon me, you find out, folks, we're talking about 20,000 to 30,000 full-time activists that are today the front of Bashar al-Assad. Some slides that show them, and the next slide, folks, refers to the rebels. The rebels, three-star. Now, those are groups that are fighting Bashar al-Assad and his regime. But do they have, all of them have the same agenda? Wrong. You'll find out, folks. And here you can see again the flag. You can see some of those groups. Look at the different flags. Because when you watch the news here in the U.S., you see some flags, some of them are black, some of them are green, some of them and so on and so on. So let's just try and refer to each one of them in two sentences. You'll find that the Islamic Front, and who are those? Folks, those are Sunni, extreme Sunni. That are about 40 to 50,000. You'll find Jabhat al-Nusra. That's the back flag with a lot of Arabs writing around. There are 15 to 20,000. I'm sorry, there are 15 to 20,000 folks. And you'll find that those 15, 20,000 are suicide bombers. Those suicide bombers are the best bomb that was ever invented. You strap some explosive to an individual, to a human being, and you send him to the target. And he gets to the target and he sees there are not enough people there. He chooses another target. You don't have to do anything. And he believes that he's got over 70 virgins waiting for him up in heaven. And they do believe that, folks. Have no doubt about it. Then you've got the Islamic State. And those are ISIS and ISIL and Daesh. Those are the ones that you hear so much about. And you'll find that their way of dealing with the matter is by decapitating, by raping, and doing everything they can, thank you very much, to get the world, the Islamic world to know, back to pre-1917, pre-World War I. That's what they want to do. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got to understand that following World War I, there's a few countries that did not exist. Jordan, Israel, Syria as we know today, Lebanon. Check the map, and I showed you the map of the Ottoman Empire. It was one huge Muslim empire. And that empire ruled by Islam according to the Islamic law of the Ashura, meaning the extreme Sunni way that those groups wants to take the world back, to create a khalifa that is part of that. That's the ideology of Sunni Islamists. You've got the Free Syrian Army. That's a small group of, I would exaggerate if I'll say 10,000, of soldiers that defected from the Syrian original army and are fighting against Bashar al-Assad for freedom. They want a democracy. And then you have another group that those are Kurds that come from Kurdistan in Turkey, that want their autonomy in Syria. They're fighting for freedom. Those two groups are just a small group of the whole Sunnite opposition that are really fighting for democracy. All the others are fighting, those that I mentioned, to bring the world back to the time of pre-1917. Photos, folks, that you have seen, maybe on TV. And now, let's try and understand who is against who, or who is being supported by whom. Now look carefully, folks. You can see that Assad troops, Iranian troops, Hezbollah militants are supported by Russia, by Iran, and by Iraq. Those would support the Kurds. And yes, folks, you say, well, why would they support the Kurds? Because they have a kind of agreement between them of one that wouldn't attack the other, and they support them with arms. But look at the Kurds. Sorry. The Kurds, okay, would pass on mainly, I say, kind of a weapons to the Free Syrian Army, okay, by supporting, but would fight the Army of Islam and Al-Qaeda. Look who supports the Army of Islam. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Kuwait. Who supports the Free Syrian Army? Turkey, UK, meaning Britain, USA, France, and Jordan. But the Free Syrian Army will support folks, the Kurds, as we said, will fight Al-Qaeda, will have an agreement of non-attacking by supplying arms to the other. So what happens is the ones that the U.S. supports arms, those arms eventually reach ISIS. And that's one of the ways that ISIS will get their weapons. Look at this slide. This slide will show you in 2013 how much of the area was controlled by ISIS. The next slide will show you, and that happened in 2014. Ladies and gentlemen, in 2015, ISIS rules today half of Syria. And look at that section over there. This is where the Golan Heights are located. They are now expanding the area over here and want to just kind of enclose on the rest of Syria at this point. Well, the next few slides are a bit difficult to watch, folks, but those are facts. Those are facts. You'll find that there's a chaos in Syria, and you'll find that the Syrian war have taken quite a toll. And I'm talking about the reports of death across Syria. Aleppo, that Christian city, folks, we are talking about kind of about 2,000 people that were killed over there. And then look at Homs, we're talking about 7,000. And ladies and gentlemen, they don't have a place even to bury their dead. They are just digging trenches and bury them by the hundreds of thousands and so on. Current folks, you'll find that the Syrian bloodiest year, if you think it was 2014, folks, forget about it. In 2015, there's already, folks, a number of 130,000. And again, photos. And again, folks, if it's not the dead, you'll have refugees, and those refugees are running where to? Running to Turkey, running to Jordan, and even getting to the borders with Israel. And folks, we take the wounded and we do not ask who did they belong to. We take them to Israeli hospitals, we treat them, and we send them back. Now, as we go on, folks, look at the refugees in 2014, 2.5 million. And today, folks, the Islamic State, and we're talking about ISIS, is getting bigger and bigger, folks. And soon, they will take over most of Syria. Now, I want to show you something, and this is where we should be concerned. What you see over here, those are arrows that shows volunteers that come from different countries in the world. And you all know about, let's say, about Saudi Arabia, there's about 2,500 that have volunteered and fighting with ISIS. There's from Kuwait, 71, from Bahrain, 12, from Iraq, 215, from Yemen, 110. But ladies and gentlemen, look over there at this section. And there you see United States, 130, Canada, 100, Ireland, 30, France, 1,200, United Kingdom, 600. Do you know where they are today? They were there in Syria. They were trained. They fought. Those numbers, we know exactly their names. And those are back into the countries they eventually originate from. They have an American passport. They have a British passport and so on. Those are individual cells that are today in the USA and other parts of Europe. And if you think for a moment that what happened 2 days ago or 3 days ago in Bangkok was just another, let's say, bomb that exploded by who know what. No, folks, those are one of those cells. And I'm teaching that, folks, for the last month from Africa all the way through the U.S. And ladies and gentlemen, those people are there. And the question is what is being done about it. Now, I can tell you what we are doing. We are preparing ourselves in many ways. If it's kind of different weapons that we come and invent. If it's a special unit known as Unit 8200, that is mainly an Israeli intelligence group that maybe you don't know about it, folks, but it's time that you find about, that are dealing mainly with this cyberspace. And we know very well that the next war that will happen will be whoever will manage to paralyze the enemy so-called cyberspace, computers and so on. But there's one thing I can tell you, folks, because whoever is control is God Almighty and no one else. Because God have created Israel 66 years ago, not for just to be there for a while. He said, I'm gathering my people back to the land. And he said that I'm gathering my people to the land, and from ashes this land came to be, and those people are there today to stay. Because Israel is a miracle and would be a miracle. However, folks, there's no way I can explain how this country came to be in the last 66 years, if not those constant miracles that are happening from 1948 up to present days. Now, dear friends, there's something that I would like to share with you in the next slide. We are being accused of using all kind of weapons against civilians. First, this is a kind of invention that is known as the trench coat, or let's call it the raincoat, that is built around our vehicles, that if anybody launches a missile, it will explode about 50 to 60 yards before it even reaches our tents. And folks, I'm showing you live photos that haven't been seen in many other places. And surely not shared to your media. Well, we are blamed for using weapons against civilians. The next slide I will share with you is the one that was passed on to me by the Israeli Air Force. And what we do, this kind of step-by-step slide, is an operation what we call knock on the roof. In the Gaza Strip, ladies and gentlemen, In the Gaza Strip, we know that many civilians are being used as human shields. Hamas will take missiles that are usually there to be launched toward Israel. They will stash them in cellars of innocent families that will be forced to give cover to those missiles, because if they wouldn't do it, they will be taken out to the streets and be shot, and we have seen that. So not to harm those people, folks, what we have done is an operation known as Knock on the Roof. What you're going to see, folks, is a system that we call the first the families. We know the phone numbers of each home in the Gaza Strip. We say, listen, we are going to target your house. In 15 minutes, we're going to destroy it. Now, what they do, instead of moving and running away, the Hamas forced them to get on the roof. And those are individual civilians that were forced by the extreme terrorists to get on the roof and be a shield. So what do, folks? We drop a bomb on the corner of the house, showing them that we are serious. So look carefully what happens. You will see, now first you can see those individuals. You see them here in the circle. Those are civilians, okay? That so-called chose to become human shields. Now, small kind of an impact over here. That's when we launched that little bomb. And you see it exploding, boom. And then look at them, they're running away. You see that over here? Those are civilians that are doing everything to run down. And when the color will come a bit bright, darker, you see them coming out of the house, okay, and the building, and here they are, okay, running away. Now, the moment we have counted 14, that's when we launched the missile. And look at that, hit that, and then you see secondary explosions. Those are the missiles that were in that cellar exploding following our kind of bomb that we launched. Do you follow? And that's what I wanted to show you. So, ladies and gentlemen, look, no doubt that there are civilians that are being hit when there's a war going on. But I'm telling you, we're doing everything in our power to prevent that from happening. The terrorists are using constantly civilians as a human shield to protect their so-called arsenal. We know that, and we do everything to eliminate it.